Caduceus Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have within you the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way, with new eyes. So stay with us, and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today, Law of Rebirth, Part 2. And before we get started, I'd like to give some credit to Alice Bailey. Alice Bailey is the founder of the Lucis Trust organization. Lucis Trust sponsors this show. Many years ago, Alice Bailey wrote 24 volumes of literature. And those 24 volumes are the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear on this show. And the following thought comes from the Alice Bailey books as well. The law of rebirth is a great natural law upon our planet. It is a process instituted and carried forward under the law of evolution. This is such an important idea. Can we summarize what we talked about last week?
Yes, we began by considering why the law of rebirth is such a great natural law upon our planet. I think one of the basic misunderstandings about the law of rebirth is that people almost always focus on the effects of rebirth in terms of the form life and the personality. Was I famous? Was I a queen? Was I Napoleon? Was I rich? Did I suffer? All of this has to do with the effects of incarnation on what we really should call the outer levels of life. And yet the writings of Alice Bailey say that the real significance of the law of rebirth is its impact upon the developing and awakening consciousness. In other words, it's through rebirth over and over again that we become wiser and more inclusive in our sense of relationships, more able to recognize our oneness with our fellow men, more able to discern our place in the divine plan. All of this has to do with consciousness, so it makes no sense to worry too much about what the physical circumstances of any particular incarnation might have been, especially since they're not recoverable. We have no way of knowing.
And also we pointed out last time that how overly closely we are associated or identified with the physical form. And we tend to see the form as being who we are, when in fact there is a being within that form, within your form, that stands quite apart from the form itself. If this being, the soul, uses the form in this particular life, and then when the form has served its purpose, the soul moves on. It doesn't die. It simply moves on to another plane, back to the source, and prepares for the next life, for the next incarnation. And so this is a process that has been going on for thousands and thousands of lifetimes for all of us. And there is a great purpose behind it all that has to do with the working out of the plan of God.
Somewhere years ago, I remember reading in a book about reincarnation that almost all of us should assume that our past lifetimes were spent being very ordinary people in very humble circumstances. And that always felt right to me, that we have probably had more than enough experience being very menial, impoverished, or perhaps ordinary, struggling human beings, and not worry or give too much time to thinking about whether we might have been someone really great in some past lifetime. That's where a lot of people lose their common sense in speculating about the past. If we're ordinary people in this lifetime, there's every chance we were even more ordinary in the last lifetime. That doesn't mean that our lives have not been of value, because the soul depends upon our gradual awakening to our relationship to the whole. As I understand it, that's really the point of it all, that we become more and more awake and able to take our place within the greater whole of life on Earth and cease living as if we are a planet or a satellite in a universe of our own.
Right, and there is the soul builds this thread. There is a thread of continuity between one life and the next, because as we are told that whatever the quality of the life that we end with at the death of one lifetime, then that quality kind of dictates what the next life will start out to be.
Not necessarily the circumstances.
No, the circumstance, but I mean the quality of the, and it all relates to the plan being worked out by the soul. But there is a certain continuity there. It picks up where he left off before, mm-hmm. in some respects. And that's a very important part of it too, because that's how the soul develops the quality of genius over a period of time. And we mentioned, or you mentioned before in the last program, about great musicians, how they spend many, many lifetimes working at their craft of they're perfecting their instrument, whether it be a violin or a piano, or the mathematicians, the great mathematicians of the world. They have spent many, many lifetimes in practicing their craft of mathematics.
I would assume that any great talent in any field is one that's been developed over many lifetimes, and the real and rare geniuses are those who have been really single-minded and one-pointed in the developing of some particular ability through rebirth. We also talked about the relation of the law of rebirth to the law of cause and effect, and pointed out that Alice Bailey says, of the two laws, the law of cause and effect is the far greater. And we speculated on why that might be. I suppose it requires that we understand the flow of energy and force. What we set in motion is our own doing, and what we experience is what we have initiated, if not in the recent memorable past, in a more distant time. But in any case, the law of cause and effect guarantees that our circumstances and conditions are exactly right for us, in the sense that they are what we ourselves have set in motion.
And what you set in motion in one lifetime may have to carry over and be adjusted and brought into balance in another lifetime, mm-hmm. with the same souls, the same people that you worked with before. Because incarnation is a group effort. You're not out there just by yourself. You come into this world with a large group of souls coming in approximately at the same time. And you may have some karmic link with these people that has to be worked out and balanced and brought into balance. And you have to bring into balance these forces and energies before you can move forward onto the next stage.
Yes, somewhere I thought I read in the books of Alice Bailey that the law of karma is the law of equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was looking for that statement, I couldn't find it. But to me, that's the point of karma, of cause and effect. The recovery of equilibrium. I don't see that it, under the beneficent divine plan, that punishment for its own sake would make any sense at all. I can't imagine that the divine creator of our world would be interested in reaping punishment just because somebody had been bad. I would think it would have to do with readjusting an equilibrium that's been thrown off balance. That's said poorly, but karma and reincarnation are meant to restore equilibrium to the life of the soul. And when we suffer and undergo punishment, that's all for the process of rediscovering the divine balance.
Yeah, we shouldn't see all of this process as being as a punishment, because it isn't really that. I mean, maybe in the case of a criminal gets thrown in jail and he's being punished for the wrongdoing in this a particular lifetime, but he can, while he's in jail or in prison, he can begin the restitution process in this life, and that's all for the good.
I suppose it's the difference between viewing a prison as a penitentiary, where you become penitent, and as a correctional institute, where you are corrected. I'd like to think of the second as more useful to the soul. We talked a little bit, and probably should talk more today, about the law of rebirth in terms of understanding the vast differences between human beings in terms of circumstances and gifts and limitations. Maybe we could return to that after the break.
Okay, good. For those people who just tuned in, you've been listening to Inner Sight, and we have a special offer from Luce's Publishing Company. And that is the Alice Bailey book, Ponder on This, which is a compilation of extracts from all 24 books by Alice Bailey. It's a great way to start the Alice Bailey books, because each chapter is really a very succinct summary of larger topics that are explored in greater depth than the other volumes. And it just gives you a chance to set up a priority list of which topics you'd like to approach first, and so on. By the way, it also includes a chapter on reincarnation, which you can explore in greater depth if you'd like to after reading that, and some of the larger works concerning that topic. It's available for $16, and the discount comes in the form of free shipping and handling, and what you need to do is send a check or a money order, $16, to Lucis Publishing, Lucis is L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And by the way, here, mention that you heard about the offer on Inner Sight. That's a check or money order for $16 to Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And we thank you for all the support you've given us in the past. Your financial support, and it certainly meant a lot to us, is what keeps us on the air. So please continue to do so. We really welcome that support and really appreciate it. So if you'd like to continue donating, please send your donations, which, by the way, are tax deductible, to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And if you'd like to contact for any reason, general package of information or asking about a meeting or whatever, just give us a call at 1-866-695-8247. The easier way to remember it is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Once again, that's 1-866, think of New York, Lucis. Our website, where you can find a lot of material about Lucis Trust, and also our archived library of radio shows. You can key into our website at www.lucistrust.org. And if you miss a current show, WOR holds the show on its website for about a week and a half, and wake up late one morning and like to hear the current show, into the WOR website, which is www.wor710.com. We also have an Arcane School conference coming up on April 23rd and 24th, and maybe Sarah and Dale can tell us a bit more in the way of details concerning that conference.
Yes, the Arcane School Conference is an annual event held in the spring of each year in the three headquarters of the Lucis Trust, New York, Geneva, and London. And the afternoon sessions, which start at 1:30 both days, are open to the public. They include some talks given by various co-workers and students in the school, meditations, group meditations, and group discussion periods, both in small groups and in larger plenary session. On Saturday the 23rd at 4 o'clock will also be the observance of the Wesak Festival, which is the full moon of the Buddha. It falls this year on the Saturday of the conference, so it's going to be a very full weekend. If people are interested in knowing more about the conference, please call us and we will be glad to send you more information.
Yes, call us on that toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247.
Got it right. The easy way to remember it is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of 1-866-NY-LUCIS. I have recurrent dreams about just the opposite of what we were talking about before when you mentioned some people think of being think they were Cleopatra or King Tut or whatever. My recurrent dream that I've had throughout my life is that of being a galley slave. But
it's probably true.
But now I don't feel so bad because it all has to do with growth and improving one's consciousness. But you were going to talk more about circumstances in regard to reincarnation, I think, weren't you?
Yes, I think the law of rebirth should make us all extremely humble. If we could see our past and all the times we've stumbled and all the mistakes we've made, I think it would make us see ourselves with more perspective. It probably would also make us more patient with our fellow human beings. But it might also give us some confidence in the persistent, unwavering power of our soul to drive us forward in experience and in consciousness. Little by little, stumbling through trial and error, we learn. As some wise person said, we learn by means of evil that good is best. We learn through the experience of what wounds and burns us to prefer that which does not cause suffering to ourselves or to others. And rebirth is the means by which we learn this.
And yes, to overcome suffering, you mentioned earlier about the full moon of the Buddha, and of course the whole thrust of Buddha's life and teachings was upon the removal of those conditions which cause suffering in the world. And that's very much the what happens with reincarnation, because lifetime after lifetime we go through these experiences and suffering, and we learn the lessons of what not to do the next time around. So it's a gradual process of consciousness expansion and growth, and that's the main thing to keep in mind. We're not being punished here. We're in this lifetime to work out the great plan of God, and as souls in the world, we do this willingly and with great sacrifice, but it's willingly and lovingly.
Somewhere in the Ageless Wisdom, there's reference to a great being who stays with our little planet, this being called the Silent Watcher, who stays and watches until the last weary pilgrim finds his way home. That suggests the enormous patience that we are granted to finally get it right. And I find that comforting and reassuring, but it also means that we can't avoid having to come to terms with our errors and limitations. We can't avoid having to correct past wrongs and to do better. There might be a tendency among some of the more slothful of us to say, well, it's the best I can do. I don't know any better. That's as good as I can do. Leave me alone. The soul doesn't view it that way. I think it says, no, you have to go back and learn and do it better next time. Speaking in terms, I think, especially of our relationships, we can't just say, well, that person is impossible and I don't like them and I don't want to be around them ever again. We have to end up establishing right relationship with absolutely everybody who comes within our sphere of experience. The soul, which is the essence of love, won't settle for anything less than that. And if we indulge our personalities, petty dislikes and hatreds, we are just delaying the soul's intention, which is to generate love. There's another interesting aspect about the law of rebirth that I think is very interesting and not very well observed in today's society. In a democratic society like this one, there's a tendency to say all people are equal and nobody's better than anyone else. And yet logic and reason tells us, yes, some are. Some are better, some are wiser, some are more talented, some are finer in character, some are more intelligent, some are less so. I think what we really mean when we say we're all alike, we're all equal, is that we are all equal before the laws of God, and we are all precious in the eyes of God, but we are not all equal in terms of attainment and ability. And the law of rebirth is a way of understanding why some people seem to have so much less aptitude and others seem to be so gifted.
Yes, we're all equal in potential, perhaps, because I think, as we mentioned before, the soul on its own plane, the soul is this mediator between God and man in the world, that soul is perfect in its own right. And the striving for perfection is not for the purpose of the soul. It's to work out the purposes of God and the plan of God that is working out on this planet. And so there is a great imbalance, you might say, between the great difference between the stages of growth between so many everybody in the world. We're all at a different stage, and yet we're all working at the same way.
I would think it would be also especially helpful to apply that law to an understanding of children and their development. Too often, well-meaning teachers and parents kind of project an intended future and level of attainment upon a child, rather than evoking from the child its recognition of what its innate, soul-chosen circumstances should be. It's a different way of seeing the unfoldment of a lifetime, and it might make us a little more patient and a little more accepting of the children who aren't necessarily going to be the most brilliant students, but they might be exceedingly loving and able to live in harmony with others. Everybody has different gifts, is my point. And all of us are standing at different points on the spectrum of development, and the law of rebirth helps us to understand what each individual's next step might be and to accept and work with it.
Yes, there are different qualities, too. I mean, every soul comes in under a different quality of energy, and we will talk about these qualities, which are called the seven rays, in future broadcasts, I think, because it's a fascinating study, and it also plays right into the whole purpose of why the soul and how the soul works with the energies in a particular lifetime, and why we express certain differences and different rates of growth and that sort of thing.
Another point that Alice Bailey makes about the law of rebirth is that it's largely conditioned by the principle that as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. That suggests to me that the the quality of our aspiration, the quality of our desire, the direction of our intention, our deepest and realest motivations are what generate our future circumstances, not only in this lifetime, but in lifetimes to come. If we thought about the fact that we are busily creating our future with every motivation and desire we have today, it might make us a little more intent on monitoring the quality of our desire and aspiration.
Absolutely, and I think that's one of the great values of taking the law of rebirth into account and really thinking about it, because it does make you stop and think. You know, your actions in this lifetime are going to affect what you may be in a next lifetime. And you're also the factor that you have to take into account. You're perhaps in a male body in this lifetime, and the next lifetime you're going to be in a female body. So your actions towards male and female relationships, also take that into account too, because you could come back and face your own medicine in the next lifetime. I don't want to scare anybody out there, but that's the tendency for it to work that way.
Well, again, that reference is interesting, because it should make us intent on being a good man if we're in a male body, a good woman if we're in a female body, and eventually skilled at being both, depending on the various incarnations we experience. It's again just another circumstance on the physical level that provides the soul with whatever opportunity that it needs. Again, to return to this point, the real emphasis of the law of rebirth is on our group relationships. The soul doesn't return to rebirth in a vacuum. It doesn't come as an isolated little satellite with a world of its own. It comes into group relationships because the soul is group conscious. And each rebirth is the recovery of ancient relationships, probably the creation of some new relationships too. But in every case, they are for the purpose of learning to love. If we looked at everybody in our lives as there to teach us how to love, it might give us a very different approach.
Please take advantage of today's special offer from Lucis Publishing Company, and that's the Alice Bailey book, Ponder on This, a compilation of extracts from all 24 books by Alice Bailey, including a chapter on reincarnation. So what you need to do is send a check or a money order for $16 to Lucis Publishing, Lucis is L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Once again, that's, and by the way, mention that you heard about the offer on Inner Sight. Lucis Publishing, $16 check or money order to Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called The Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on